This is just a funny piece. I'll start with Tom Gimble, the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network, by reading it to you. Is that okay, Tom?
Perfect, John. I like it.
CNBC had a piece that began the final minutes of the job interview, when the interviewer is done with their questions and opens up the floor. It's time you don't want to waste. Asking smart, thoughtful questions can give you an edge over other candidates. There's one question in particular that you should always ask in a job interview, says LinkedIn career expert Andrew McCaskill. What does success look like to you in the first 90 days of this role? But at CNBC, they say there's one question you should avoid. What does success look like to you in 90 days? And there's another piece in the Daily Mail about a job recruiter who says you might want to avoid sharing too much personal information about what they might expect from you in the first 90 days. So it's up and it's down. Is that an appropriate question? Does it have value? And should you ask it even if you're the employee, the prospective employee?
Yeah, John, I think it's actually a good question from the employee, and I actually find it to be an interesting question, maybe phrased a little bit differently, from the employer. And so often that employees think they're coming into a situation and just to get their sea legs, and they're just going to onboard, and they don't have to, the real work doesn't begin in the first 90 days. On the flip side, the employer may want people to hit the ground running, and we're going to expect you to have hit certain benchmarks and certain milestones and have certain goals. So I actually believe that the dialogue and laying out expectations from the get-go and how you're going to measure success are really, really important. And it gives insight into how the management team thinks about it.
Yeah, or maybe the employee thinks about how aggressive they're going to pursue the job. But if you ask me in the first 90 days, what do you hope to accomplish? I'd go, well, I got to figure out where the men's room is. I'm not sure where I'm going to park. Who's my boss again? I mean,
Yep. You
know, I can't imagine. I mean, don't you imagine that a response would be half BS, like I'm going to increase sales 19%? No, you're not. You don't even know what we're doing here yet.
Correct. And that's why it's probably a better question to start with from the employee, saying, how are you going to measure my success in the first 90 days? And I think that's right. So then the employer can say, well, let me give you the benchmarks of the other people we've hired at your level who come in here and what they accomplished. And if you're thinking that way, there's two ways. Well, there's always a third way just to survive. But most employees come in and say, yeah, who's the worst performer and how do I do better than that? And then the other one say, who's the best performer and what do I really shoot for?
Keep going, Tom.
Go ahead. And so an employee is looking and saying, so if an employer responds to that question and says, here are the last three people we've hired, you know, right out of college or at a managerial level, and this is what they accomplished or this is what their group did, you know what they're compared. It's about what you're being compared to.
It seems to me, and this is the point I was going to make, I'll let you respond in just a minute. We're talking to Tom Gimble, the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network, that the few times I've been asked by an intern here or maybe one of my kids or some college grad that I've been helping out, and they're trying to craft a letter or some sort of introduction to a prospective employer, and there's a mistake I think they fall into. And I've tried to steer them away from making this. I suppose this is maybe a mistake we all make when we're seeking employment. Now, let me tell you what I think it is, and let me tell you what I think the response should be. Incidentally, we were just talking about questions you should or should not ask on the job, be you the employer or the prospective employee, and there's a pro and con to where do you see yourself in 90 days? Hey, John Williams, if it takes you 90 days to find the bathroom or where you're going to park, I would never hire you. So that question's a buster for me. But here's the question, Tom Gimble, who joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch each week, the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. The times that I have been asked to sort of edit for somebody their introductory letter or their pitch, I often find them going into the why I need this job so much, why it's important to me. And I think you have to position it as why you need me, why it's important to you that I get this job, what value I bring. Tom, your thoughts?
I think you've replaced me as the job expert, John. I think you're exactly right. It is too often, I really want to get into a great training program. I really want to be in a stable organization instead of, No one will outwork me. I guarantee you that I'm a quick learner and my references to validate this. I will hit the ground running like we were talking about earlier. What most people don't do is they're not honest with themselves, John, so they can't be honest with the potential employer. And when you're asking questions, you've got to ask questions that are really important to you, but about the job and what you're going to be doing. Do you want to get promoted? Do you want more responsibility? Do you want to earn more money? And a lot of times people don't even connect those dots, that you don't get to earn more money without taking on more responsibility. That's really the crux of it. And so asking about promotions, people go, so is there a history of promotions? But the real, you know, the right, most employers will come back and say, yeah, it's up to you. How hard are you prepared to work?
But is that not, that's not presumptuous or, I mean, it's maybe it shows ambition, but if I'm applying for a job, is it okay for me to ask about the next job I want at the company? Does that make it seem like I'm not really interested in the task I'm about to be assigned to?
A couple things. Number one, it depends on the level of the role. Number two, it really depends on how you phrase it. I think if you say, is there a history of people being promoted from this role? That's a good question. That shows that you want, you're motivated. You want it. Because a lot of people say, if a company won't promote from a certain role and you want to be promoted, you don't want that job. And sometimes people get so caught up in what I need today versus is it the right place for me? And you've got to be willing. That's why money isn't the almighty in a starting salary. You want to find out what the variable compensation is. You want to find out what promotion tracks are. And again, it's a lot different at 45 years old with a mortgage and a family and so on and so forth versus being 25 years old and renting and being single and what have you. So you've really got to take an honest look at what's important to you. And you should really have questions well in advance about the career path and what you're going to be doing in the job when you go into the meeting.
Tom, I just have a minute and a half or so left here, but before you came on, we were talking about people that wear political messaging to sporting events like a Cubs game. And should the Cubs mm-hmm. allow somebody with a F this candidate or an F candidate that shirt or even a MAGA shirt or something like that? And a couple of texts include these. As a conservative working at a liberal company, I would get fired if I stood up for what I believed in at work. Somebody else said, if you're getting paid for a job, act like you were doing that job. If you want to play politics, get a political job and give up your million-dollar job. What do you say about political messaging on shirts or hats at work?
I think at work, I think it probably gets a little bit hazy. But when you start telling people that they can't wear something that says Make America Great Again or LGBTQ plus or what have you, you're really getting into a situation, John, that certain things are associated with political parties versus... It didn't used to be, John, when you and I were kids, that you had to agree with 100% of a platform and you'd be stereotyped that way. And to me, that's the real danger that we have in the country right now. But if you start outlawing that, you're going to start with religious symbols are going to end up being moved out next. And you're going to have a very vanilla society where people, you're taking away freedom of speech. And I think it gets to be dangerous.
So you would not ban those unless it became really problematic, huh?
Yeah, I would think, you know, I would question why somebody would want to start the trouble and they need the feeling to make that statement. And I'd be more nervous about their judgment, depending on the role that they're in, that they want to make that bold of a statement. But at the end of the day, we have a freedom of speech and people.
If this was a sales call, I mean, you know, we're probably wearing a shirt and tie anyway, but
I'd say they're an idiot. I'd say they're an idiot, John.
Hey, John Williams, I always have two questions in my interview that people find strange. This is an interviewer. I ask them, if you had to teach someone how to ride a bicycle, how would you do it? And the second question is, tell me a joke, and it has to be a clean joke. But those are just sort of left field, maybe, sorts of questions, but maybe they're revelatory. Do you like those sorts of oddball questions?
I do. I think if you have a myriad of them during it, you're probably wasting time. But I think that one of the main reasons people do it is to see how quickly someone can.
Yeah, right.
And you're going to be in meetings and conversations. And if you're not the person who can think on your feet, to come up with something that it's not to tell, it's not the be all and end all, but it gives some insight.
Right. I really don't care about riding bicycles. I just want to see how you handle this question. My answer would be go to YouTube, but maybe that's not the sort of inventive answer they're looking for. Tom Gimbel is the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. It's always nice, Tom. Thank you.
Yep, my kids got scraped knees, John, because I just pushed them.
Yes, that does not surprise me. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. One last note from a listener about Tom Gimbel from the LaSalle Network and political speech at work. John, I'll wear what I want at work. As long as I'm doing my job, who cares? Capital letters now, freedom of speech, and then a bunch of exclamation points. Free speech for Harvey Wells, the founder at Lower Tech Bills. LowerTechBills.com is his website. Harvey's a longtime radio professional who's transitioned now in his work life to helping people with their home technology, and he's made a bit of a career out of it, haven't you?
Well, a lot of thanks to WGN and you, I've really gotten a lot of people contacting me through these appearances, so I appreciate that. But it all started because I retired, and I realized that I was paying way too much, but didn't have time to really dig into it. So every month, it's just here, we'll just pay the bill, pay the bill, pay the bill. When I finally had the time, I realized, holy cow. And then I did it for a couple of friends.
Holy cow, what?
Holy cow, am I overspending?
Overspending. But yeah. did you find that you had to minimize your services to lower your costs?
That's the irony here, is that these providers oftentimes will keep on a yearly basis getting your bills and increasing them. They increase them without you knowing about it, because what they do is they offer you $10 a month or $5 a month for paperless billing. And when you do paperless billing, you don't look at bills unless you are really active and go online and use a username and a password and dig into it, and it takes you 20 minutes to even find the bill. So you just pay. So this paperless billing thing, it really hurts the consumer, even though you might be saving a little money.
Saving $5.
Yeah.
Even then, though, I wonder, all right, so suppose I take the time and I see the bill. What am I going to do? I either pay the bill or don't pay the bill.
Well, you could hire me, but outside of that, seriously, though, what you need to do is get proactive. What you need to do is take a look at your bill. Look at what is it you really need. Do you need 1.2 gigabytes of speed on your internet, which is the highest amount of speed you can get these days? Or will 300 or 400 gigabytes do?
And there's a cost differential?
Totally. Or do you need 300 channels when you're only watching an average of about 12?
The 1-point-something gigabyte would be if I'm a gamer?
A gamer, or maybe you're working from home and you're downloading a lot of stuff, or maybe uploading a lot of things to the internet. But mostly, even heavy-duty gamers might not even need that kind of speed.
Mostly, I would say... If you're residential, not a business service, you're watching movies, you're emailing, you're occasionally looking at a little video. But I mean, I can imagine that most people's use is pretty pedestrian.
Sure.
They don't need a whole lot. So like, is only 300 megabytes all I need?
300-400 is probably just fine for most consumers. Everybody goes, well, I want the fastest internet, or I want the most channels. You don't need the most channels. You only need the channels you watch, and you don't need the most speed unless you are really doing something specific for your business.
Do you notice if you don't have sufficient speed that the screen pixelates? Is that a sign that maybe you aren't up to speed?
Yes, that is one way of doing it. If it pixelates, or if it gets choppy or something
right.
like that.
Okay, and then your decision is up, but I can live with that. Or I'm going to pay more and get faster service.
And it's always easier to start low and go up than to just stay high and go, well, I got the right amount, but start at 400 or 500 and see if that works for you.
Harvey, when you hear from our listeners, what do they mostly ask you to do?
Most people talk about cutting the cord, because that is an expression that has really gotten into the lexicon of our world. I got to cut the cord. I got to cut the cord. And what I tell people is, hold on, before you decide to cut the cord, what is it you really need and want? For example, I do a lot of business with Xfinity. And frankly, I'll be honest with you, I thought in the beginning that's what you did. When you cut the cord, you left cable. That's not the case. Xfinity does some wonderful things, and they have some great deals, and it really depends on what you need and what your technical skills are.
So, you think I should walk into the Xfinity store and talk to them? I mean, I'd be happy to hire you too, but I mean, I wonder what's the best way to communicate these concerns.
This is a great question. It's number one on my list to talk about today.
Why?
Because a lot of my clients have talked to customer service and they don't go in the store. And what I find almost 100% of the time is that when you call the company, you're dealing with somebody who is paid on a high commission basis. They may be in a foreign country, not their fault that they don't speak English as a first language, but that's a fact. And they don't have all of the tools available that a store has. In fact, I have some very close relationships with a bunch of stores, whether it's Comcast or whether it's AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile, it's always the same. They can do things. Yeah, a little smile on your face, you'd be surprised what somebody in the store can do for you if you're just go in there with a smile and say, can you really help me?
Harvey Wells actually makes house calls. This is his business. You go online, you maybe answer a few questions on a digital form, and then he shows up at your house.
Yeah, if your house is in, by the way, if it's in Honolulu, happy to go there, just pay for my travel.
And then he helps you with your phone bill,
yes,
your cable bill and Wi-Fi, your internet.
Right, exactly.
And then the platforms upon which you view all of these shows. You have a list of the 10 most frequently used video platforms, is that right?
Yeah, the other day what I decided to do was take a look at some of the most popular streaming platforms, and I did 10 of them, and they're the usual suspects from Netflix to Prime to Max and Hulu and those kinds, Disney and those kinds of things. And what I came up with is if you want the commercial-free version of those platforms, and that's how this all started with Netflix, you paid $7.99 a month and you got this great content with no commercials, you are now paying for those 10 streaming services is more than you paid for a cable subscription just 10 years ago. You're paying $125 a month for the commercial-free version of those 10 platforms. So we've gone back to cable prices, and we thought we were going to save money with streaming, and we're not.
And we're also watching commercials.
And we're also,
if we're doing the least expensive version.
It's about $85 a month for those 10 if you want the commercial version.
$85 a month. So that's just under $1,000 a year for those premium services.
Yeah.
And that's the cheap version.
And that's what cable cost back just a decade ago.
Well, I'm trying to remember now, but with cable, we didn't get Netflix. We didn't get Showtime.
Right. You could get Showtime or HBO for an extra of...
But you paid a premium
for that. It was about $7, $8 a month back then for those.
I don't know what to make of that, Harvey. I mean, but I get such good television on those other platforms.
That's the problem. And these services, for example, Comcast just came out with their earnings today. Peacock, which is one of the big streaming services, lost... $348 million because they're paying all these A-listers to do all this great content that we love. The problem is they're all losing money. So what happens? Peacock is raising their rates next month from $5.99 to $7.99 a month. Now, the Olympics are coming up, and a lot of people want to watch the Olympics, and Peacock is going to be broadcasting the Olympics. My suggestion is you get Peacock today, and as soon as the Olympics are over, unsubscribe. Otherwise, you'll go to $7.99 a month.
There's an expression for that. I forget what it is, where you jump in and jump out of these services, where you say, okay, the Game of Thrones is coming on the next season. I'll go ahead and get HBO or whatever the platform is, watch that, and then as soon as it's done, I'll just cancel. People do that, don't they?
They do. And you think about it, well, it's only $7.99 a month or whatever. In fact, Max is raising their rates to almost $17 a month this month in August.
Really?
So, I mean, these things were $8 a month or $7 a month just a few years ago. Now you can pay $22 a month for Netflix. So you can see how they've all raised their prices. And these, like I say, these A-list actors with the admittedly great content you get, but somebody's paying for it.
Okay, let's pause. 312-981-7200. Call or text if you've got a question about your situation. 312-981-7200. And then you audit people's use.
I will do a free tech check of your cable, cell, and internet services. All you need to do is go to my website, which is lowertechbills.com, and I, for absolutely no charge whatsoever, will do a free tech check. So that's something that I'm happy to do for people.
I want you to do the thing where you come into my house and you eliminate half of my clickers. If I only had two remote controls, God, if there was only one. And I know they have those universal ones, but I have not had much luck with
that's
those.
Above my pay grade, sir. Okay. That is tough to do.
312-981-7200. More business news on the Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A rideshare company called Black Wolf is in the process of applying for an operating license in Chicago. The company's drivers, including former military, police, and private security, are armed and have multiple years of protective experience. Cranes reports Black Wolf could be operating in Chicago by August if its application is approved. The company launched in Atlanta in 2003 and operates in Phoenix and eight cities in Florida. Drivers use luxury vehicles, are trained in de-escalation and evasive driving, and only draw their weapons as a last resort. Riders can request an unarmed driver. The service cost is similar to Uber Black, which runs about $38 on average in Chicago. Downers Grove-based Dover Corporation is selling its garbage truck manufacturing business for $2 billion in an all-cash transaction. The buyer is Terex Corporation from Connecticut. Dover builds garbage trucks under the Heil brand, and the business generated sales totaling $750 million last year. The sale is expected to close in the second half of this year. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, now the business of food, and Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and yesterday we featured Steve Goodman's auctioneer song.
$30 bidder now, $35.
And real-life auctioneer Dan Sullivan.
$35 bid, $100 now, $100.
And what Dan Sullivan and Steve Goodman have in common is leukemia. Steve, the Maine East High School grad who endeared himself to Chicago and the world with his songs, died of leukemia in 1984 at the age of 36. Dan Sullivan's son, Michael, was 33 when he was told he had leukemia.
Our whole world just it turned upside down when they told us that.
Medicine has come a long way in the 40 years since Steve Goodman died, and we will catch up on Michael's story and the amazing way the Sullivan family said thank you to his doctors and nurses after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. In fact, you could drive yours to Hamilton, Illinois, where you'd find Dan Sullivan and his family.
We're in extreme west central Illinois, right on the Mississippi River.
Dan, his brothers, and several of their children run Sullivan Auctions, now part of the Big Iron Group, selling farmland and equipment across the Midwest. Life was busy and good, until they found out that Michael had
a rare form of leukemia, that he was very sick and needed to get somewhere.
Somewhere turned out to be the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. Michael needed a bone marrow transplant, and his sister Gracie was not a perfect match, but good enough to try.
She was just so glad to do it. I mean, it was rewarding for her that she could save her brother's life.
How's Michael doing today?
He's doing great. Thanks for asking, Steve. He's doing good. We've been very proactive and on top of it, but he's at work every day, and he's doing great.
But that wasn't enough for Michael and the rest of the Sullivans. They wanted to thank the Mayo Clinic the Sullivan way. They auctioned off one of the most iconic tractors ever built, a 1972 John Deere 4020.
And we ended up raising right out of $500,000 for Mayo Clinic.
How about that? And one of the reasons for retelling the story is Dan wanted me to urge you to sign up to be a potential donor at BeTheMatch.org. He says it's easier than it's ever been, just like donating blood.
You have a chance to save a life, Steve. I mean, it's just amazing.
BeTheMatch.org. On the food calendar, it's National Vanilla Ice Cream Day. It's National Lemon Day, too. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Okay, Harvey Wells, you ready to answer some
questions?
Yes,
I am.
I've got a question. I have DirecTV on satellite, but don't have Wi-Fi. Can I get Peacock? I guess they're thinking about the Olympics without
perhaps
streaming.
Yeah, and there are two ways to do this. The way number one would be is if you subscribed instead of to DirecTV to Xfinity Comcast, if you're in an area that gets it, because they're owned by NBC and NBC owns Peacock. So you can do it that way. Or the other way is if you have a cell phone, you can use the data from your cell phone to download the Peacock app and subscribe and watch it either on your cell phone or, and then getting technical there, cast it to your TV. So there is a way to do that, but it's a little technical.
Thanks to Harvey on your show, I went into Xfinity and I changed plans, and I'm now saving $150 a month.
That's pretty good. Thank you, whoever that is. I will tell you this, John. My average client saves between $800 and $2,000 a year Okay, now I do a free tech check by going to my website, lowertechbills.com, and I will give you free advice. But if I can save you that much money, then we talk about a fee that I charge. But average client will save, I've saved people close to $4,000. So it really depends on the person.
Wow. Okay, let's go to Tom. You're on WGN. Tom, what can we do for you?
Hey, I just wanted to mention Xfinity's got a great deal right now. You get Peacock, Netflix, and Apple for $15 a month.
You know what? That's what I was saying earlier. He's right. That's called their streaming package. You can pick those three services, and Xfinity is getting very competitive because they have to, not only for that kind of thing, but their internet. Now, they have some deals on the internet that really a year ago you would never see. But the reason is because you might have seen T-Mobile or you might have seen Verizon or AT&T with their new home internet, and Comcast, Xfinity has come back with some great deals right now.
Peacock, Netflix, and Apple TV. For
$15 a month. Yeah, that's our streaming package.
Tom, very good. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Scott, what about you? You're on with Harvey Wells. Hi, Scott.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
So I have a question. I've been with Xfinity for, 100 years now, I think.
Yeah.
But you always see that, hey, for new customers, you could get this price, all of this stuff, for X amount a month. What are the pros and cons of like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go over to DirecTV for a couple of years. Then when they offer another, just keep switching back and forth.
Go back and be a new customer.
Well, that you could do that. The better thing to do outside of hiring me is to do it yourself, and that is to go into the store. And if you're not under contract, you are going to be treated as a new customer. So you really do have to be proactive. If you don't use me, then please be proactive and go to the store.
You're saying it could be as simple as saying, hey, I want the new customer deal.
Yeah, or because a lot of these people that are my clients, they end up being not under contract at all. And so every year, again, I'll go back to the paperless billing, that price goes up and up and up. And all they really need to do is try to get to that store and try to negotiate it themselves. Or, like I said, hire me and I'll help you out. Because I'm in those stores every week.
Thank you, Scott. I'll bet you are. They hate to see you come. Or maybe they love seeing you walk in the door.
They don't mind me because they know that they're going to earn a commission if they can help.
Anthony, you're on WGN. What's your question?
Hi, yes. I know that like Netflix and some of the other streaming services have been cracking down on sharing, but what if you legitimately have two homes? So we're thinking of buying a summer place also.
You can
How does
do that.
That work?
You can do that. Most of these streaming services, as long as you sort of it's called a geo-targeting. They can geo-target where you live, and as long as you have the same subscription and go to someplace else, you can. There's a way to turn off the service where your one home is, and then stream from the other. They'll know where you are. For example, Hulu does that, where they'll say, "Oh, we notice you've moved. Is this still you?" And you can go, "Yes."
Does it disconnect it then from your regular home if you're at your beach house?
Yeah, and then you just, or there are some services like YouTube TV where they allow multiple homes.
Well, I think you would want that. Sometimes you're there and the kids are here or whatever.
Absolutely. So it depends on the streaming service. And Netflix, by the way, for $23 a month will allow you multiple sharing.
$23 a month.
Oh, yeah.
And Hulu has that service as well?
Hulu does not. Hulu will allow you to just go from one place to another, where Netflix, they know there was so much screen sharing that finally they said, we're just going to charge you more and go ahead and screen share.
I was watching Netflix in my house over the weekend, and I got a statement on my screen, and it said that the service is going to be discontinued on this device like in a week. And I wonder if it's such an old TV that they're no longer going to honor the operating system of that software in the TV?
Wow, I would doubt it. I would call just customer service and find out. You may be having two different Netflix accounts.
I think we do.
And I think they've busted you.
Well, I think that's, I also thought, I think that somebody figured out. I don't even know who's paying for that account.
Yeah, and Netflix was the first one to do that. And now all the streaming services are getting in line.
We're out of time. So Harvey Wells' website is lowertechbills.com. When you click on there, you'll see how easy it is to fill out some basic information, and then he'll come to your house and Hoover your vacuum. He'll Hoover your rug and do everything.
I'll do that, but I don't do dishes.
Harvey Wells is the founder at lowertechbills.com, lowertechbills.com.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.